Today at Reader's Corner, David Rode, author of Where Tyranny Begins, The Justice Department, the FBI, and the War on Democracy. I'm Bob Custer. Welcome to Reader's Corner. Our guest today has spent his career investigating genocide, global politics, and the U.S. intelligence apparatus. His efforts have earned him unlawful detentions, a kidnapping by the Taliban, and two Pulitzer Prizes for his international reporting. In his latest book, Where Tyranny Begins, The Justice Department, the FBI, and the War on Democracy, David Rode investigates the strategies Trump systematically used to turn the country's two most powerful law enforcement agencies into his own personal political weapons. David Rode is the author of several books, including In Deep, The FBI, the CIA, and the Truth About America's Deep State. He is the national security editor at NBC News and a former executive editor of the New Yorker website, where he wrote about the Justice Department, democracy, and disinformation. David Rode, welcome to Reader's Corner.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Well, David, I can't say enough about your book. Highly recommend it to our listeners as a way of getting chapter and verse of what happened from 2018 right on until a few weeks ago, I suppose we could say, when it comes to lawbreaking and when it comes to investigating and enforcing lawbreaking in the federal government. In a way, for you, what's happened just in the last week or so must feel like, if it's not Where Tyranny Begins, it now becomes the book called Where Tyranny Flourishes.
Well, it's just, and I guess part of this is like for Republicans and, you know, supporters of President Trump, they see, you know, the Justice Department, the FBI as tyrannical, and that, you know, say the Russia investigation way back when and his first term wasn't fair. And now, you know, and Democrats now fear the same way. So I focus on the Justice Department and FBI because they're so important in terms of democracy and upholding the rule of law. And so that's why it was really the focus of my work. You know, we're deeply divided politically, and I was just trying to get some facts. And most of all, I wanted to talk to people who worked in the DOJ and FBI about why they work there and how they see this really deep partisanship that's dividing us.
Well, since you wrote the book, obviously, President Trump has begun his second term, and he immediately took action to fire members of the Justice Department and the FBI. One of those members, James Dennehy, in a sense, fought back, saying he was digging in, telling his colleagues to stay and fight. I wonder if you could comment for us, is this going to work? Will these firings be final? Or might Dennehy be onto something in terms of how to keep the integrity of the FBI where it is?
So what we're talking about is, do we need an independent federal law enforcement agencies, an independent FBI, where, and this was the sort of system set up after Watergate. J. Edgar Hoover used the FBI to go after his perceived enemies, and President Nixon used the Justice Department to do that. So for 50 years, we've had an independent FBI director serving on a 10-year term so that, you know, it's not aligned with any specific president's term in office. And the idea that there could be law enforcement officials who are public servants, a lot of what I'm talking about is that, you know, and I feel personally like we need nonpartisan public servants to interpret the law, and hopefully in a fair way. We need nonpartisan election clerks to count votes in elections in an accurate and fair way, and nonpartisan journalists to sort of put out facts and talk about them in a fair way. And that whole system is unraveling. So what happened was that there were removals by the new Trump administration officials of eight senior FBI officials in Washington. And there was also a request for the name of every single FBI agent who had worked on January 6th investigations. And James Dennehy stood up, that he's a well-respected guy, head of the biggest FBI office in the country, and said, you know, this is payback and political meddling. FBI agents were ordered to work on these cases, and it would be wrong to retaliate against them. And so things have quieted down. There haven't been more firings. The names of those agents are going to be handed over from the FBI. These are agents that worked on January 6th investigations to the Justice Department. The Justice Department oversees the FBI. So there's still nervousness, but the question is sort of what happens now? Will those 6,000 agents be punished or forced out, or will it be a much smaller number or maybe none at all?
Well, we'll stay tuned, but in the meantime, I want to get back to your book. And what I'd like to do is have you comment on a number of observations that you write about in the book. You interviewed so many people for this book, and a good number of them gave their thoughts on what could be done or what was wrong or why things went awry in those early years. For example, let's talk about the norms. Obviously, any agency is going to put certain norms in place to guarantee fairness, to guarantee independence, to make sure it's the rule of law rather than the rule of politics that prevails. But when Attorney General Sessions was in office, and of course, then he wasn't because President Trump fired him, Sessions failed to grasp the new political reality of the Trump era. Why don't we start with just what makes this new era so different? I think you said it so well that we are in a different place than we were with presidents prior to Trump.
And look, President Trump has successfully said that he convinced, you know, he won the election. Most Americans who voted agree with him that the, I'm not trying to speak generally for the many millions of Americans who voted for him, but that he was mistreated in terms of the criminal investigations that went on. And under the Biden administration, roughly, you know, 49% of the country, the law enforcement investigations of Trump for, you know, mishandling classified documents and his role on January 6th should have been investigated. They kind of fear President Trump. They think he's going to do illegal things in a second term, but Trump won the election. So it was misjudging. People in the Justice Department sort of believe these rules and these procedures and, you know, say they aren't corrupt. So there's just a gulf in the United States now about, can there be nonpartisan public servants? Should the president control and tell the FBI to do exactly what the president wants and voters can decide every 4 years? Or should there be an independent FBI director who has a 10-year term and the president doesn't meddle in criminal investigations? And so that's this big issue that came up after Watergate, and it's coming up again now.
You're listening to Reader's Corner. My guest today is David Rode, author of Where Tyranny Begins, The Justice Department, the FBI, and the War on Democracy. When it comes to the way the FBI deals with the public, does there need to be a change in how it addresses these issues before the public? It seems that one of the things I picked up in your book is that there's this practice of no comment on an existing case. And more than one of your interviewees said, we need more open communications. This is not the old days when President Nixon, who was shamed by what he did in Watergate, stepped back and didn't fire back. Now we have a president, and this is the title of one of your chapters, who's investigating the investigators, who is charging the investigators. So in this different world, in a number of different places in your book, you seem to be quoting people or saying yourself that, man, these guys need to rethink their so-called norms or rules of how they do business.
Yes. So that's exactly right. And I do think there's a way for them to be more transparent with the public that, you know, you can't just sit. This is both for the DOJ and the FBI. You can't sort of wait back and think, you know, and just say, kind of trust me to the American public. So that was sort of what happened. Some critics said in the wake of the Mar-a-Lago search that the FBI and the Justice Department were sort of too passive in terms of explaining to the public why they had carried that search out. And so that was a mistake there. So yes, there's a need for them to be more transparent. An FBI person in the book who didn't want to be named, but who was a character, said, trust me, just doesn't cut it in the digital age.
So let's talk about Attorney General Garland. Before I picked up your book, having followed the news pretty regularly over the last few years, both my wife and I came to the conclusion, just watching this guy on TV, that he was not the best pick Biden could have come up with for attorney general. He struck us as timid, cautious. And when I read your book, same thing. I see a number of observations in your book. He's a former judge. He loves process. And he handles the press from arm's length. Rather not comment at all, rather than comment and say something, I suppose, that he fears would either violate the rule of law, perhaps. It took him 4 months to find an FBI director for the District of Columbia, I think it was. I wonder if you could comment on this Garland's role in this whole thing. I mean, he's not blameless in how this all turned out.
That's true. He is an experienced judge. I think he's a very well-intentioned person. Just if you interact with him, he really believes in the American system, in nonpartisan public servants. He thinks that there can be a Justice Department that can be tough on Republicans and tough on Democrats, no matter who the president is. But there is a sense he was slow moving. He and his aides bitterly sort of contest this, but there's a sense that he didn't move fast enough in the first year of the investigation of Trump's role in the January 6th case. And so, you know, there's a chapter in my book called The Lost Year, and that is a criticism of Garland. In the end, that year didn't matter because the Supreme Court ruled that, you know, the president, this immunity ruling, which we can talk about separately, and it's a complicated situation legally.
Well, before we do that, let's go to Florida and the documents case, the classified documents. I know a number of political types who have said to me, boy, did they blow it there. They just handed Trump an issue that he could use with his MAGA allies, that he could use to build an even larger constituency, proving to people that he was the wounded warrior and the object of scorn by this very partisan FBI and DOJ. When you read your book, you've gone into some serious detail here of just what happened. And I suppose we could all have read this in the papers back in 2017 or 18, whenever it was, but better that perhaps you tell us, what's the linchpin here that made the FBI and DOJ feel so strongly that they had to bring this case? Because there are a lot of people to this day who say, you know what, they shouldn't have messed with that. It just built up more credibility for the guy than he needed.
So there was an amazing debate inside the investigation about how to handle this. Legally speaking, the case against Donald Trump that he mishandled classified documents was incredibly strong. And if any American government employee had done what he did in terms of taking the documents to Mar-a-Lago, there were requests for over a year, I think nearly a year and a half, for him to return those, and he said no. And then a Justice Department official came down to Mar-a-Lago, met with Trump's lawyer. Trump himself came over and said, I'm completely transparent. And they gave and signed affidavit from the lawyer saying, here are the final 30 roughly classified documents. After that happened, the law enforcement got a tip and they were able to get surveillance video. And Trump had actually had people in Mar-a-Lago move dozens of documents and hide those boxes from the DOJ official. And once they had these videotapes, and after they'd waited for a year and a half, they felt that they were going too easy. The DOJ officials and several FBI officials felt if they didn't go and get these documents, they were worried there were, you know, Russian or Chinese officials, that there was top secret documents that somehow could leak, and that they were treating Trump completely differently than all these dozens of other people that they had, government employees that they had prosecuted for mishandling classified documents. And yes, then there was another group of FBI officials. Stephen D'Antuono was the head of this group. He was the head of the Washington field office. He was like, let's keep trying to negotiate with Trump and let's not play into his hands by doing this search. And it was just interesting because, you know, the officials that who did decide to do the search were trying to, you know, the one criticism I always hear about DOJ and FBI officials, even by people who've worked there, is that they don't have a good sense of politics. And they really do believe that in this like equal application of the law. So they went in and recovered these documents. And politically, though, it backfired. Trump just said it was completely unjustified. And but they still feel they were upholding the law.
Mm-hmm. Well, what caught my attention was the detail where the lawyers for DOJ talk to the lawyers for Trump. They assure them that they've all been handed over. But then there's this video that shows Trump's assistant moving a number of files out of where they were supposed to be, that were supposed to have been given up, I guess. Do I have that right? I mean, they basically lied.
They moved them the night before the DOJ official came down.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
a sworn statement from the lawyer, Trump's lawyer, was given to them saying, here are all the remaining classified documents. And then they found 100 classified documents in the basement when they did the, So he was withholding. And then Trump said, I'm president, I can do this. And we are so divided in that, again, Republicans and Trump supporters see that search of his house as totally outrageous and unfair. Democrats and liberals see the fact that he wasn't, unlike other Americans, he wasn't prosecuted for that as totally outrageous and unfair.
One of the things you stress in your book, or at least those who you have interviewed have stressed, is the nonpartisanship and the professionalism of the FBI. And I'd like you to talk a little bit about that in two different directions. First of all, there were a couple of Justice Department employees who got caught with some text messages that would definitely give Trump the right to say these guys are partisan. Secondly, I'd like you to talk about Jody Hunt as an example of a guy who does seem to be the poster child for the nonpartisan professional career prosecutor, and what he finally ends up doing at the very end. I'm thinking of Cassidy here.
So Jody Hunt is one of the main characters in the book. He grows up in Alabama, you know, and he goes to work for the Justice Department. He works for Republicans and Democrats, you know, really believes, again, in this post-Watergate system of an independent, nonpartisan DOJ and all government agencies who carry out the legal orders. I want to emphasize legal orders and the legal policies of the duly elected president. And that's what the civil servants do. He becomes Jeff Sessions' chief of staff. And there's this famous dynamic where Trump wants Sessions to fire Robert Mueller, the special counsel who gets appointed after Trump fires James Comey. And Sessions says, I have to recuse myself because the whole investigation is into the Trump campaign. And Jeff Sessions was a senior advisor to the Trump campaign. And on legal grounds for lawyers, this is, of course, he had to recuse himself. He can't investigate an organization he was part of. He can't fairly investigate it. And Jody Hunt watches Trump just privately and publicly attack Sessions for not firing Mueller and for recusing himself. And eventually, the way, seeing how Sessions is treated and all this stuff, Hunt ends up resigning from the Justice Department. He's also very frustrated when the Trump White House tries to block the publication of John Bolton's book. It's another case he was directly involved in where the White House said there was all top secret information in it. And there wasn't, according to Hunt. And he found that to be a particularly galling example of the president using the presidential powers for their own sort of political gain. It looked like Trump didn't want embarrassing details in Bolton's book to get out to the public. And the quick summary is, Hunt believed that the presidency would change Trump, and instead, Trump changed the presidency.
Again, I know this is a very small point, but when you have a president who is absolutely convinced that there is partisanship going on in the Department of Justice, it doesn't help much when two text messages get revealed that basically have to do with two of these so-called nonpartisan employees getting partisan and calling out who ought to be elected.
Well, that's the problem, and that's where the whole system is sort of breaking down, because James Comey ends up going on TV and saying how dangerous Trump is. And John Brennan, the former director of the CIA, after Trump, you know, says, Brennan's plotting against me and they're leaking the dossier. I mean, I can talk about that. I asked Brennan about the dossier and he actually advised me to not write about it. But everything is like breaking down. No one trusts each other. Former law enforcement and intelligence officials are getting on TV and playing into this narrative of a biased deep state. They're saying, I'm just defending myself from a false claim Donald Trump made. I just worry that I think we need umpires. I think we need nonpartisan public servants. I want to see power divided between a strong presidency, a strong Congress, and a strong judiciary. And I just worry that our hyper partisanship is dividing us. and making it harder and harder for all of us to agree on basic facts. And it's making it harder and harder for presidents and Congress to fix the country's problems, to pass legislation. So that's where I'm coming from.
Well, I'll tell you what bothers me from reading your book. I do think you make a pretty convincing argument that by and large, this Department of Justice and this FBI is nonpartisan. It is professional. It applies the rule of law to whomever violates the law. And yet I have to wonder, given what went on from 2016 to 2020, and then what's happened just in these last few weeks, help us understand how the FBI and the Justice Department gets young lawyers to become prosecutors, and how the FBI gets folks to become agents, and who's going to go there next after what's going on? Dennehy's out there digging in, and thank goodness he is, but I worry that even if Trump doesn't succeed in court, so to speak, he may succeed in the culture, because young people will say, I'm not going there. I can't be protected to apply the rule of law. It doesn't make any sense.
That's the danger to me. And maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like we need somebody with basic facts. You know, I'll say public health experts. And I know nobody, you know, people love Anthony Fauci or they hate him. But if we can't agree on basic things, you know, how big is the deficit right now? We can't solve our public policy problems. And I'm not saying Republicans or Democrats have the right answers, but, and you mentioned earlier, like I've covered these other countries, and if we don't have people willing to go in and be police officers, you know, willing to be election clerks, you know, willing to be public health experts, willing to be civil engineers who make sure that the bridges we build actually will stand, that's a problem for us as a country. And I worry that if everyone sees it as just a public service, as just this massive pit of, you know, attacks, yeah, and partisanship, no one will want to do these jobs. Mm-hmm.
I wonder what you think of the interview you had with, I believe it was the secretary, press secretary to Attorney General Sessions. Toward the end of your book, you quote her as saying something like, there's a tremendous lack of political experience in the FBI and the DOJ, which I assume she was saying was responsible for how clueless some of these leaders are when it comes to communicating with the public or knowing what to say and what not to say. Lack of political experience is different than lack of partisan experience. Is she just saying that at least we need someone who better understands the new era we're living in now with a President Trump that operates so differently than all presidents before him?
There is this question of kind of political savvy, and you're thinking of the same quote I mentioned earlier in terms of these are lawyers who run the Justice Department and, you know, former FBI agents who often run the FBI, and they have little, they're too insulated and they're not thinking of the public battle that's going on here. And there's a lot of frustration back to Jody Hunt. I mean, and a lot of frustration I would think right now with all these civil servants. And again, look, Ronald Reagan talked about bureaucrats and government being the problem, not the solution, and the government being too big. Today, it's that bureaucrats are like members of the deep state, that they're plotting coups, that they're trying to stop a democratically elected president. This is what Trump supporters feel, from carrying out the policies that, you know, they were voted into office to carry out. And that's a big change from like government's too fat to government is anti-democratic. Kash Patel talked about this in his book about the deep state. I didn't find plots by career civil servants, you know, in basements in Northern Virginia to kind of stop a democratically elected president. Civil servants will say, I don't think this policy is legal or ethical. And if they feel that a policy isn't legal or ethical, they can resign. And so my worry, and then you could look, the criticism of liberals is that Trump is an authoritarian and a demagogue and going to like end American democracy. Some argue Republicans call that Trump derangement syndrome. I'm just very worried, and I will finally go into like my time as a foreign correspondent. This kind of division can eventually lead to political violence. And this amount of bad information and conspiracy theories really divides us. And, you know, I find social media to be full of exaggerated claims and conspiracy theories. So all that worries me as a journalist, and worries me as a journalist who's covered civil wars where conspiracy theories literally led to violence.
David Rode, I want to thank you for joining us today at Reader's Corner. I'm going to let you get back to your Pulitzer Prize reporting. You've done a magnificent job with this book, Where Tyranny Begins, the Justice Department, the FBI, and the War on Democracy by David Rode. Thanks again, David, for joining us today at Reader's Corner.
Thank you so much for having me.
I hope you enjoyed my interview with David Rode. He's perhaps the most interesting author ever to visit Reader's Corner, and here's why. Rode has covered wars across the globe, and one of his most dangerous moments came to life in Afghanistan in 2008, when he decided to interview a Taliban commander after covering the war in Afghanistan for 7 years and working on a book about the failing U.S. effort there. It was a risky move, to say the least, and his scheduled interview turned out to be a trap. He was kidnapped by his supposed interviewee and held captive by the Taliban for 7 months and 10 days in safe houses in Pakistan. A Robe and a Prayer, the story of a kidnapping from two sides, is Rode's story, told in alternating chapters by Rode and his wife, Kristen Mulvihill, a painter and photo director for Cosmopolitan magazine. She was just 2 months into their marriage when she joined the fight to free her husband and bring him home. One reviewer called the book, Two Intensely Personal Consequences of Myopic, Lopsided International Meddling in Central and South Asia, a timely resource for anyone trying to understand the trajectory of violence during the last decade in a region that has been ravaged by war. I've not read the book and don't know how I missed it when it came out after his release. I just wish I could have interviewed David about the book when it was published in 2010. Rode's dangerous mission to interview a Taliban commander should come as no surprise given his Pulitzer Prize winning coverage of the Bosnian wars in the 1990s, where he was the first eyewitness to the aftermath of the Srebrenica massacre when over 8,000 Bosnian Muslim boys and men were killed in what became known as the Srebrenica genocide. Rode's book on the subject is Endgame, The Betrayal and Fall of Srebrenica, Europe's worst massacre since World War II. In the process of covering that war, Rode was held for detention by the Bosnian Serbs in 1995. And by the way, Srebrenica is spelled S-R-E-B-R-E-N-I-C-A. Nothing like it is pronounced. David Rode typifies reporters who put their lives on the line to bring us the news daily. And I'm just delighted that I could interview him for this latest book we discussed today, Where Tyranny Begins, the Justice Department, the FBI, and the War on Democracy, a book to be read from cover to cover, like the rest of his. Another book about reporters putting their lives on the line to bring us news from the world's hotspots is Clarissa Ward's 2021 book On All Fronts, The Education of a Journalist. As CNN's chief international correspondent, she covered war-torn Syria just after a coalition of Syrian rebels ousted the despot Bashar al-Assad from the country. She accompanied the rebels to a prison of Assad's that held those who opposed his regime. In a small cell, she and her Syrian colleague uncovered a pile of blankets to find a prisoner very much alive, but in the state of shock, thinking he had been found by Assad's troops. Ward held him as she comforted and convinced him that she was not with Assad's men, and she gently and carefully ushered the man to daylight, which he had not seen in months. I am struck by how the work of reporting turns humanitarian, and Clarissa Ward is that kind of reporter, not only willing to take risks, but also to offer a compassionate assist to those foundering in the fog of war. Again, Clarissa Ward's book, On All Fronts, The Education of a Journalist. Reader's Corner is presented by Boise State Public Radio News. The sound engineer for today's show is James Baker, with production by Joel Wayne. I'm Bob Kustra. Please join me next week as we talk to today's leading writers about the ideas and issues that shape our world at Reader's Corner.
No matter what happens in Washington, the NPR Politics Podcast is here for you. For the latest news, insights, and analysis from the election and beyond, listen to the NPR Politics Podcast.